Three developer-focused stories this segment that all touch on the theme of making powerful data and protocol infrastructure more accessible. Starting with DuckDB, which has been a darling of the data engineering community for a couple of years now, and this deep dive on its internals is getting 209 points and 67 comments.
DuckDB, for anyone unfamiliar, is an in-process analytical database, meaning it runs inside your application rather than as a separate server. It's columnar storage, optimized for analytical queries, and the benchmark numbers against other systems for the kinds of queries that show up in data science work are genuinely impressive. The post from graybeam.ai is called "Why is DuckDB Fast?" and it goes into the architectural choices that produce those numbers.
The core insight the post covers is vectorized execution. Traditional database engines process rows one at a time. They pull a row, evaluate predicates, move on. DuckDB processes data in vectors, meaning chunks of a column at once, which maps much more efficiently to modern CPU architectures, particularly the SIMD instruction sets that allow you to apply the same operation to multiple data points simultaneously. This is not a new idea. MonetDB pioneered it, and DuckDB's lineage goes back to that research. But DuckDB's execution of it is particularly clean.
What the post also gets into is the query optimizer and how DuckDB handles the pipeline from SQL to execution plan. The HN comments from people who work on database internals are adding nuance, pointing out that the columnar compression DuckDB uses also contributes significantly, because compressed data fits better in CPU cache, which means you're spending less time waiting on memory access. Cache performance is one of those things that doesn't sound dramatic, but explains enormous performance gaps in practice.
This is where I'd do a brief curriculum corner, because DuckDB's growing adoption in enterprise data stacks intersects with some interesting market dynamics that mirror regulatory patterns. Before I get there, though, the story of DuckDB moving from an academic project at CWI in Amsterdam to something embedded in production data workflows at major companies is a case study in how infrastructure software propagates. It didn't need a massive marketing budget. It needed to be meaningfully better at a specific thing.
That's the Paul Buchheit thesis we'll talk about later, actually, about products that are great at one thing not needing to be good at everything else. DuckDB is a perfect example.
Now, on the curriculum corner point, the story of database consolidation is actually a good lens through which to understand antitrust law basics, because these dynamics come up in tech markets regularly. The Sherman Antitrust Act, passed in 1890, is the foundational U.S. antitrust statute, and it prohibits two distinct things: anti-competitive agreements between companies and monopolization by a single company. The monopolization piece is what most people think of when they hear antitrust, but the legal definition of monopoly is more precise than the casual use of the word.
Right, and this is something that comes up constantly in discussions about big tech. Having a large market share is not itself illegal. What the Sherman Act targets is the willful acquisition or maintenance of monopoly power through exclusionary conduct, meaning you have to both dominate a market and have gotten or stayed there by doing something that harms competition, rather than just by being better.
The classic analogy is a railroad that controls the only track between two cities. If they got there by building the best railroad, that's fine under antitrust theory. If they bought up all the competing rights of way to prevent anyone else from building, that's exclusionary conduct. The market share alone tells you very little. You need to understand how it was achieved and maintained. That's why antitrust cases are so fact-intensive and slow. The Google search case took years precisely because establishing willful exclusion requires examining thousands of business decisions.
And that context matters for understanding why database markets, cloud provider bundling, and even AI model access are all areas where antitrust questions are being raised right now. It's not about size, it's about the conduct that produces or preserves that size.
Pivoting to zero-touch OAuth for MCP, this is the Model Context Protocol, which is Anthropic's open standard for connecting AI models to external tools and data sources. The blog post announcing enterprise-managed authentication is getting 205 points and 71 comments, which is a lot for a protocol announcement.
The reason it's generating attention is that enterprise authentication has been one of the practical blockers for MCP adoption in corporate environments. Most enterprises use identity providers, Microsoft Entra, Okta, and similar. And previously, MCP integrations required manual OAuth configuration that the enterprise IT and security teams had to review and approve for every connection. Zero touch means the enterprise administrator can pre-configure the authorization policies once, and individual MCP connections then inherit those policies without requiring per-connection human approval.
That sounds like a plumbing detail, but the business implication is real. Enterprise IT departments have been the bottleneck for AI tooling adoption because each new integration looks like a new security surface area. If you can fold MCP connections into existing identity governance frameworks, you remove a layer of friction that has been slowing down deployment. This is the kind of infrastructure work that doesn't generate a press release, but enables everything else.
The HN comments are flagging some concerns about the security model, specifically around the delegated consent mechanics, and whether the zero-touch framing might lead enterprises to be less rigorous about reviewing what they're authorizing. There's a tension between reducing friction and maintaining meaningful oversight that the thread is working through thoughtfully.
And the third story here is Dataset Apps from Simon Willison, who built Dataset as a tool for publishing and exploring SQLite databases. The new feature lets you host custom HTML applications inside Dataset itself, which is a significant expansion of what the tool can do. Score of 89 with 30 comments, smaller, but the HN audience for developer tools is engaged and specific.
What's notable about this is Willison's consistent pattern of shipping incrementally and documenting everything publicly. He's been building in public on Dataset for years, and each addition compounds the tool's usefulness. Hosting custom apps inside the Data Explorer means you can build interactive dashboards and small tools that live directly alongside the data they operate on without needing to stand up a separate web server. For small teams and researchers, that's a real workflow improvement.